You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. Let's check in on South Dakota's elections. We'll share the latest updates and news about who might appear on your ballot next year. Seth Tupper is the editor-in-chief of South Dakota Searchlight, and Kevin Wooster is a longtime journalist in the state. They joined me from SDPB's Black Hills Surgical Hospital studio in Rapid City. We'll begin with a shirt that made Kevin Wooster do a double take at Mass. You learned something going to church. As you're walking out of Mass, you saw a woman in a T-shirt, and this gave you pause and some thoughts, and you're certainly not asking her to not wear her T-shirt, but it made you think about things. Tell me a little bit about This City Belongs to Jesus.
Well, I was minding my own business. Wait, no, I wasn't, as my wife points out. Do you mind more people's business, including during Mass, than anybody I know? But I think God wants me to do that.
Always the reporter. God's reporter.
God's reporter. And it took me a minute, and I didn't know the woman. Sometimes for noon Mass, there's a regular group, and then people come in and out. And she was walking away, and I just noticed she had a Message T-shirt, and it said, "This city belongs to Jesus." And my question immediately was, "It does?" And I guess I'm inclined to believe that for myself, but that gave me something to think about on the drive home. Well, how would other people look at that T-shirt, and how would they see it, and what would that mean to them?
Yeah, because it had Rapid City, South Dakota, written on it, printed on it as well.
Yeah, down below it said in big letters, "The city belongs to Jesus," and down below it, Rapid City, South Dakota. And I was aware that there was this movement, especially here in Rapid City, I think, but I assume it's elsewhere. This city belongs to Jesus, and that there'd actually been some rallies under that theme. And so I went home and Googled it, and immediately, as you get to in the Google, "This city belongs," it writes the rest of the sentence for you to Jesus, and then sent me to the page for Rapid City. And I read some things on that page, including a reference to the Church of Rapid City, which I thought, wait, what? And that just got me thinking about this whole idea of intersection of faith and community and government and First Amendment and things like that.
What's the purpose of the organization that you've been able to ascertain?
Well, I think the very strong beliefs, very strong Christian beliefs, and I think that to try and bring those to the community, and I'm sure in most senses in a positive way and not any sort of insidious way. But I think the concern that I have is as deep as I think, I hope, I try to have my Christian faith, I'm always aware that it is my Christian faith, and it is not everybody's, and people have strongly felt beliefs about other faiths and no faiths, and all of us are citizens.
And I think one of the points that you bring out in the, because I looked at the website as well, and there's, you know, prayer walks and, you know, adopt a street and do some praying, which seems, you know, pretty standard Christian, you know, public activity.
Sure.
But it's this word "city" that's kind of bothering you, because it is an implication of, you know, government and church, that this is kind of what you're diving into there. The Rapid City mayor is a former pastor, yes, or a current pastor.
You know, I don't know how that works. He was an
executive
pastor at one of the churches here, and a big, popular, well-attended church. And I don't know if you keep that title when you get another one. But I remember I even wrote a couple of years ago at a community prayer breakfast here that one of the speakers that referred to him, or one of the people that introduced him, as a pastor masquerading as a mayor. Mm-hmm. And everybody laughed about it, and I tried to speak with Mayor Solomon about that a couple of times after that, and we just never managed to get that done. And I think he was a little uncomfortable with it. I think he liked it, and he... You know, but also thought, not everybody's going to like the sound of that. And, you know, and I also had, even beyond the government of the question, is just the whole idea that we would own an entire city as Christians when that's, I don't think ownership. And one of the things that struck me, too, was imagine if you're a Lakota person and you don't happen to be a Christian Lakota person, and you already feel, as an Indian collective sign says, this is our place. And now suddenly we're claiming it for a religion that you don't share and don't participate in. There's just a lot of questions about that.
Yeah, like flag planting, or is it implied that somebody doesn't belong, or this community doesn't belong to someone else if it belongs to Jesus? There's a lot happening there. It maybe just doesn't all fit on a T-shirt.
Well, yeah, and I think that if you're here, then you're supposed to be Christian. I think I'm concerned about that. You don't belong to Rapid City if you're not Christian. I was concerned about that point.
So as a Christian, how do you work to make Christ the center of your life but not necessarily the center of your politics? Or alternatively, how does your faith inform your politics?
Well, and I think that's the word. I hope that it informs my politics. I hope that it informs how I conduct my daily life. And I hope good Christian politicians will be informed by what I consider to be the New Testament, especially message of love and forgiveness and charity and grace as the dominant approach to things. Mm-hmm. And, but again, I want when a government leader gets up in the morning and decides how he's going to conduct his business affairs in terms of government and leadership, I referring to the Bible is fine, but I really want him to refer to the Constitution. That's what his job is.
Seth Tupper, what would you add to this as you read Kevin Wooster's commentary, published it in South Dakota Searchlight? What are you looking for, in governmental leaders, who lead with their faith and talk openly about their faith, as in South Dakota is often the case, really?
Well, I would just say how relevant it is as a commentary when you think back. At South Dakota Searchlight, we focus on, state policy, state government, state politics. And, you look back at the last legislative session and we had a bill to require, that would have required, it failed, but would have required the posting of the Ten Commandments in every public school classroom in South Dakota.
Mm-hmm.
Can get a more clear mixing of, state and religion than that. And so it's a debate that I think will come back to the legislature. It's something that is going to continue to stay relevant, and it's something that we need, voices out there talking about the idea that there should be separation of church and state seems to have fallen out of favor with quite a lot of people, especially on the right side of the political spectrum. And I think it's important to talk about why we have had that tradition in this country and why it's important.
Meanwhile, Seth, there is a lot brewing about hate crimes and hate crime legislation in the next state legislature, which may have completely fizzled out by next January. But as we talk about that, that becomes one of the areas where in the state house you would anticipate religion being discussed on the floor of the House, on the floor of the Senate. What have you seen in some of those debates that you find insightful going forward when we talk about the separation of church and state? Because you've sat in a lot of state house debate.
I guess what I would say is we definitely have a contingent of legislators that don't believe in the separation of church and state and don't believe that is a foundational idea or principle of our country, and don't believe that it's valid and believe that it should be obliterated. And they're trying to do that with legislation every year, whether it's blatant or whether it's taking a little bite of the apple and trying to get at it a little at a time. Last year, the Ten Commandments bill was a pretty big swing at it that failed. But, in the past, they passed a bill that every school in the state has to have a sign posted that says, "In God We Trust," and that's law. And there are those signs when you walk into the school now.
Yeah.
And so it can be big things or it can be little things. There's a creep that goes on where, oh, maybe this is okay, maybe that's okay, it's not a big deal. And I just think we got to keep the conversation out there and going, because as Kevin says, not everybody is a Christian. It is the predominant religion in South Dakota, but separation of church and state has served our country well to make sure, as Kevin said in the column, that one religion doesn't dominate other people who don't share the same beliefs in the public square. So it's something we have to protect against.
Yeah. All right, let's talk a little bit about some candidate announcements, and maybe we'll focus today on the race for the U.S. House. Congressman Dusty Johnson has decided he would like to leave Washington and run for governor of South Dakota, which creates an opening. And we have a couple more people who have now officially said that they are interested in the job. Seth, why don't you kick us off with some of the top Republican announcements that you've seen lately?
Well, yeah, Marty Jackley, the current Republican Attorney General, you know, it was already known that he was going to run, but he held his official kickoff in Sturgis, so I drove up there. I guess that was last week. I don't know, I lose track. It could have been last month or yesterday, anyway, the way the news works. But anyway, sometime recently, I drove up there.
September 9th is when you publish the piece.
There you go. The days blend together.
Yeah, but, I got you.
I did drive up there, and he had quite a crowd, quite a bit was made in sort of the political blogosphere about the sort of maybe the ideological diversity of the crowd within the Republican Party. There were legislators there like Scott Odenbach and Phil Jensen. And who you would consider to be maybe more far to the right on the political spectrum, and there were more moderate Republicans there, and so not what maybe just a person off the street would call a diverse crowd, but what maybe you would call a diverse ideological crowd within the Republican Party. And his announcement, you know, it was interesting to me. He mentioned Trump a couple of times in his speech, but there wasn't, you know, Trump iconography there. It wasn't a huge part of the announcement. He didn't focus on President Trump, which I thought was a different, I don't know if that was on purpose, but it was a different tone than we see out of a lot of other Republican politicians now. And then we saw yesterday, as we're taping this, Casey Crabtree, a state senator from Madison, formally announced, and his announcement seemed to be a lot about President Trump and saying he would be with President Trump on everything, and so a little bit of a different tack there, and maybe that's accidental, and you know, maybe going forward the race will be all about who's more like Trump. You know, I don't know, but at the start, Attorney General Jackley did talk in his announcement about things like, yeah, we have to secure the border, and President Trump is doing that, but he also said he wants to work on legal immigration, and he knows the challenges that businesses in the Black Hills have to get enough workers here on temporary visas from other countries to fill tourism jobs in the summer and things like that. So he did sort of broaden his rhetoric a little bit beyond just, hey, I'll be the most supportive of Trump of any candidate in this race.
He has been very vocal about the rule of law, and you're just not going to shake him off the rule of law no matter what. I want to get to some of their vulnerabilities or even liabilities as candidates, Jackley and Crabtree. But Kevin Wooster, some of the things that you see early on in Marty Jackley's campaign, and maybe it's a little early for Casey Crabtree, but things out of the gate that you notice that they're leading with.
Well, I know Marty a lot better than I know Crabtree, so I'm kind of getting a perspective from what Seth wrote. But I was struck by that Crabtree's was so heavily Trump. Certainly law and order. He's got a sense, I think, for people out here and the tourism industry. And but I was thinking, Marty, it's almost like your announcement is for the general and not the primary. Hmm. And I don't know why that would be, because I assume if he gets by the primary, he's got the general wrapped up. No offense to the Democratic candidate. Are there any?
We'll get there. We'll get there. There are several. There's going to be a Democratic primary, as a matter of fact, so we'll get to that.
Oh, that's right. I read that story.
Yes, all right.
I don't care about that right now. I might start. See, I'm in a position in my journalism career where I don't have to care about stuff like that if I don't feel like it.
I'll care about them later on.
Okay, yeah.
Yes.
I was struck by that, and the fact that he led on immigration, not with so much with we have to get the, you know, like the Toby Doden type stuff, the stuff that I get in my mailbox, where the picture of the horrible looking, we assume he's meant to be or is a gang member, and that represents the immigrants to you? Because that doesn't represent the immigrants that we pray for up in my church every day. But that Marty was softer toned on that and more practical on that than I thought he might be. And I thought to myself, will that work in a Republican primary? Hmm. And And will he carry through on that message?
There were an awful lot of donors on the list for his kickoff fundraiser in Sioux Falls.
Uh-huh.
Like a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they count in the primary.
They do. Yeah. And are we saying, and do you know enough about the donors, do you, Seth, to think they would like that message better?
So, you know, Casey Crabtree is so early on in the race, I don't think he's had to file a campaign finance report yet, so we don't know. You know, when I've talked to people about the race, though, Senator Crabtree works in economic development, East River. I've been told and I've heard that he apparently has a good fundraising network and is able to tap into a lot of fundraising sources. So I don't, you know, if the assumption is that because Marty Jackley is more name recognition and he's won statewide races before, he'll be able to raise a ton more money. Mm. I've had some people say to me, maybe that's not necessarily as true as you would think. Mm. So that's another reason I was surprised that, you know, I didn't hear Attorney General Jackley go harder to the right as a primary. And maybe he will. You know, maybe this was among friends and Sturgis. And
it's so early.
Where he grew up.
Yeah.
It's so early.
It's very early. Yes, very
I think
very
I said that. I said law and order. I think I also meant rule of law. That, you know, that's something that he said again and again. I'm not quite sure what I said there. So some strengths, Marty Jackley, name recognition. Does Casey Crabtree have that name recognition, Seth, do you think?
Not at all.
No.
I don't think so. Yeah. You know, obviously, we always distinguish, you know, within Republican circles and primary voters. But, you know, some of his name recognition, frankly, is a problem for him because among some Republicans, he's known primarily as the guy who prime sponsored a carbon dioxide pipeline bill in 2024 that opponents to the Summit Carbon pipeline, the proposed pipeline, did not like and referred to a vote, and it got rejected by voters.
Yeah. So let's talk about some of those vulnerabilities or liabilities. That's one of his.
So to the extent that he has name recognition,
moved out of leadership.
That,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, which is not necessarily positive for him in a Republican primary.
And I think I read in your piece. He responded, "I'm never going to apologize for standing up for farmers." That's how. Is that a good way for him to position that particular legislation and his efforts for it? It was a piece by Joshua Heyer in South Dakota Sources.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we'll find out. I mean, that, you know, I really distinctly remember the day that he and then also Will Mortensen, mm-hmm. they were the two legislators that really came up with that bill in 2024. And their idea that they thought they were doing was they thought they had come up with a great sort of compromise that their bill wasn't going to ban eminent domain for carbon pipelines or stop any carbon pipelines from being built, mm-hmm. but it was going to add new protections for landowners and counties and try to strike this balance of we want development, but we want protection for people affected by development. They thought they had done a great thing. Well, their bill passed. The pipeline opponents hated it. They referred it, got rejected by voters. Then we come to the primary election in 2024. 14 Republican incumbents lose their elections in part because some of them had supported that pipeline bill. Will Mortensen and Casey Crabtree, among others, get booted out of leadership when legislators have their leadership elections. And so it is a little curious. And this is the guy then that's going to run for primary on that record with Republican voters. I think it's going to be a challenge for him. Yeah. I really do.
You probably hit on the Trump thing. He's got to hit Trump hard. He's got to be on
because
Trump
of that.
Because of that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Other vulnerabilities for Marty Jackley's campaign?
Well,
where the bumps in the campaign road there?
My question is, I think Marty's good on camera. He's been practicing on camera for years. I mean, he's always accessible. He comes to town. He seeks out reporters. He wants to talk to reporters. He loves to talk to reporters. When's the last time, and I can't think, somebody smarter than I am with a better memory, my brother Terry, maybe would remember when was the last time we sent a lawman to Congress? An attorney general, a South Dakota attorney general, went on to Congress because
Janklow, probably.
Yeah. Janklow, no. Probably.
Yeah, he had been attorney general.
Anybody before that? I mean, and Janklow always had a little bit of that lawman mentality, but he certainly had became the governor. Is that a tough leap? I don't know. As I told him in a text, I thought he was very smart not to run for governor, which he was really interested in doing. And then he talks about getting into D.C. to be in the fight. And let's not use any of that language anymore. Let's not use going to war. Let's not use fighting with the opponents. Let's just stop using that as an aside.
Noted.
You know, we're talking about liabilities. You know, mm-hmm. I think my mind and a lot of people's minds for Attorney General Jackley goes to his association with T. Denny Sanford. And
yeah.
He represented T. Denny Sanford when is part of the public record. I want to be careful about what I say here because Sanford was never convicted of anything. But at one point, it's been public record that he was investigated on charges, potential charges related to child pornography. And for a time, when Marty Jackley was in private practice, he represented T. Denny Sanford.
So how does that stick? How does that stick to him? I mean,
well,
T. Denny Sanford isn't running,
you know.
So his opponent uses it, and he says, "I'm an attorney, and I represent clients in all kinds of difficult scenarios."
Well, that would be. If you applied logic to the situation.
Yes, right. That would be reasonable for people.
In politics.
I mean, he just did his job, right? It was to represent somebody vigorously. And that, again, goes back to rule of law. Everybody.
I'm sure
deserves,
that's what he'll say
if
an attack comes. But obviously, I would imagine that there are all manner of creative ways that somebody could come up with to make an emotional political appeal on that might stick with voters.
Now I see the postcard in my head and right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And
which
it doesn't have to be coming from Crabtree's campaign. Right. It probably wouldn't come from Crabtree's campaign. It would come with one of these fly-by-night set up for the mm-hmm. specific person of purpose of hurting Jackley late in the campaign. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Other weaknesses or things that Crabtree has to overcome, Jackley has to overcome, other than just the general nature of campaigning in America, like physical security is an issue, money and fundraising is an issue. What's happening in Washington is always an issue. But, Kevin, I hear you saying threats from Democrats who are having their own primary is probably not something that's going to keep a Republican candidate up at night.
Well, I wouldn't think it would unless the Republican candidate is hyper, concerned about those kind of things, is a little bit overly paranoid. All I hope is that the candidate that does run is a credible candidate who puts up important issues mm-hmm. because that matters, and it always matters. I have a little sport with the Democrats on that, and I'm sure they don't always appreciate it, but it is important that the Republican candidate has a challenger and has a credible, reasonable challenger who raises real issues in a real way and has enough money, hopefully not his or her own money, but that raised for them to raise those issues.
Yeah.
And so I do hope that happens.
And who is out there, Seth, listening to, people around the kitchen table, in the local coffee shop, finding out what South Dakota's issues are. That's also the role of a Democratic candidate, is to go out and listen and find out where are the gaps, what do people need, what would make a successful campaign for them. That's everybody's job, but it's especially important for Democrats who don't have much of a foothold, if any at all, politically in the state.
Yeah, and to bring their names into it, Billy Mahoney is a nonprofit executive in Sioux Falls who said he's going to run.
Mm-hmm.
Nikki Gronley, formerly was the, I believe, the director of rural development in South Dakota for the USDA, and she said she's going to run.
Mm-hmm.
There's another guy named Scott Schlegel I don't know much about, but has filed a statement of candidacy with the FEC. So it looks like, if they all stay in it, there will be a primary, and certainly will be people that, seem to be credible candidates who will be in there mixing it up. So I think, by and large, the fact that we'll have a lively Republican primary and a lively Democratic primary for House, that's something we don't get a lot in South Dakota, is have, lively primaries on both sides. So there should be a great back and forth and debate, and I think it'll be good for the process and good for voters.
Here's something that just happened this week, too. The United Nations Commission published its legal analysis of Israel's conduct on the Gaza Strip and said, quote, "Israel is committing genocide against Palestinians in Gaza." That's according to the legal framework of the United Nations Genocide Convention of 1948. All of these candidates are probably at some point going to be asked about this, and that brings up, Seth and Kevin, this idea of these litmus tests, ask somebody at a press conference, get them on social media saying something. There's going to be an incredible amount of pressure for people to say yes or no to all kinds of questions. Is there room for nuance in this particular debate, especially when we have someone saying, I'm as for Trump as I can possibly be, you can't have a lot of daylight between you and the president there if you're Casey Crabtree. What does that mean going forward? Does the political landscapes change?
Well, if there was room for nuance, then Marty Jackley would have a great explanation for why he is a professional lawyer represented Denny Sanford, and people would say, well, of course, he did his job, that's all. And Casey Crabtree would have a logical explanation yep. for his support and sponsorship of the bill that a lot of people didn't like. And
so what you're saying is the candidate would be the successful is the one who's able to destroy nuance the most effectively.
I think that's true.
Basically, yeah.
You see nuance go by you as a candidate, hit it with a mallet.
Destroy the nuance for the other person. Yeah.
I refuse to let it go. I refuse to let nuance go.
Oh, for a little bit of nuance in politics. Oh, I wish.
Maybe that's why we're canceled. Too much nuance.
But you know, that's
27 minutes of nuance. Yeah.
Too.
Yeah.
You know, is to try to bring yeah. that nuance, whether people want to hear it or not. We right. do try to bring it. Sometimes you bring it on this show, Laurie. Obviously, and we try to bring it South Dakota yeah. Searchlight. So we will try to bring that nuance as the campaign goes forward. We'll yeah. see how successful yeah. we are.
All right, gentlemen. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.